Give us the gig, yeah.
Yeah, thanks.
Right. Just giving President my address.
Okay.
This business we have, we're now looking at the possibility of adapting the broad concepts of the tax implications that we've looked at, adapting the fundamental concepts, same concepts, toward a Progress Party policy to be incorporated in our standard policy document. Now, Prince Leonard, let's have that same comment with you, Mr. Gavin.
For the setting of a platform, well, firstly, where the governments have been acting contrary to the law, that is the law of the Constitution in income tax, then I would suggest that a platform must be based that a government will re-legislate the Income Tax Act so that the government's actions are in accordance with law, which today they are not.
Well,
such as Cobble, who's even collecting it? Cobble? States? Well, this is still with the states, not with the Commonwealth. The Commonwealth's got to take it first, then it's got to re-legislate.
In the meantime, the civil servants are without money.
Well, it's going to take a very strong government to go through the rectification of this position. To ignore that the position exists, I think it's disastrous, because it's only probably compounding it even further. When it gets in such a mess as it is today, I think it ought to be resolved now and not let go further. Admittedly, it's going to be a very precarious time for all governments, precarious time for people. But it's going to take some very sensible people in government with a very sound platform to be able to rectify this. But the governments assuredly have done just this. They've brought this upon the government's shoulders themselves. Therefore, they've simply just got to get out of it. And if they don't turn around and get out of it now, then I think that it's not only myself, but there are many more people getting very, very close to the verge of this knowledge, and I think that it comes out in many other fields, not just in this type of thing, but we find that, you know, if you look back over a period when there's been, you know, realisations of many things or new inventions, quite often one person has done it, another, you know, individually. There seems to be quite often many minds start training into a kind of a line. And I think that it's very indicative within Australia that there are many minds training in and zoning in on these types of laws, whereas before they've been complacently accepting. Today they are not. They're zoning in. We all here tonight are kind of discussing and zoning in. And this is being done many, many places, and gradually through that zoning in, the true perspective of the laws and the actions that have occurred are going to come out into clarity in many different minds, and then many people today might know it, but don't know what to do about it, or think that they're not able or capable of arguing against the government. But then, very soon, people that are either members of parliament or members of opposition are going to come to these realisations, and they are going to do something about it.
I'm sure never before has a situation existed where you could say that so many natives are murmuring uneasily right around the troops are all scratching the ground.
But further than to be in a position where you're sitting over a Governor General, and in fact allowing Her Majesty by your own sanction to be able to continue as a monarchy, because her government and Governor-General have placed her monarchy in jeopardy, is quite a thing. This situation I don't think has ever occurred before. But this situation is here now today.
Now, what was the link between what Jeff has written there and the fact that the combination of the Tax Act and the Constitution makes the Income Act, Collection of Income Act, sort of null and void? What's the link between that and the fact that the government is doing it illegally with the knowledge of the governor, with the ultimate knowledge of the monarch?
Well, the data that I have just given there has no reference then to the Governor General of Australia or Her Majesty, because he's not concerned with that, I don't think, in his particular personal case in income tax. In reference then in bringing in the Hutch River Province, in our situation I've laid the laws in writing with Mutt and Fraser. The Court of the Crown Prosecutor has already admitted that they have been acting illegally and asked the court's permission to be allowed to continue simply because of precedence of time, which is wrong by Section 5 of the Constitution. I've laid all that data that's given to Malcolm Fraser with the Governor-General. I requested a meeting with him on a specific date some time back and pointed out that in two simple laws I would clearly show him that the actions under the Income Tax Act being done by Malcolm Fraser's government is totally illegal. He apologised for not being able to have that meeting with me on that one day, which I was in Sydney. The premiers of all states know also, because they have a copy of the letter, that Malcolm Fraser has been so advised and that the Governor-General has been so advised. Now, the Governor-General then is Her Majesty's rep, he's acting in Her Majesty's name, and he is allowing and condoling Malcolm Fraser's continuance at and up to this time, from the time of that notice that he received, to act in indifference to the law of the Parliament.
Right.
Which is a breach of the Coronation Oath, which undertakes to enforce the law, which has not been done. And under the Coronation Oath, the Coronation Oath itself is an agreement. In fact, it can be considered, I think, in line with even to govern. To govern under a democratic government is considered to be a social contract. The Coronation Oath is even more a contract than the election of members to governments to Parliament. It's a greater contract than that contract. And of course then a breach of a contract, under the breaches of a contract under imperial law, is that for a person so breaking such agreement forfeits all rights and privileges that they would otherwise have under that agreement. You are therefore then placing the sovereignty in jeopardy.
To blow their cover brings us to the point of a republic, which is a
So I think it's one which very carefully wants to be considered in not blowing the cover, but looking at the political ways to write the thing to the way it ought to be, and then for any particular party that's going to undertake the effort to write it, and if it wishes, to try and elevate itself up into the power of government to whatever degree it can, to, and it's quite likely that it may well and truly have to do that, to be able to effect it and to maintain it. In certain degrees, with its knowledge and the threat that it could and will perhaps call on the Governor-General to at least sack Malcolm Fraser, certainly puts Malcolm Fraser's government, I think, in a position of some responsiveness to any requests or suggestions by that party. If that party wants to go further, then up to that party. But if a party just goes further and then calls on the Governor General to resign or to sack Malcolm Fraser or either or both, but does no other benefit for itself, can become, if it doesn't watch out, just acts of vindictiveness and gaining nothing which it could otherwise obtain without vindictiveness. So vindictiveness in itself is not always a thing that's, you know, you might not like a person, you might not like a party, you might not like a party's policy. Doesn't necessarily mean that you need to bring in vindictiveness if you're going to still achieve that which you wish without simple vindictiveness. I think it's one that takes a lot of deep thought, isn't it? And wants quite some deep policy thinking, but I think the machinery there is very good that any party could not ask for a better, say, weapon, if you consider it a weapon, or a better thing to use as a platform, because if you're referring anywhere to the people of the Commonwealth of Australia, you're telling each person in the Commonwealth of Australia, you have been wrongfully robbed of X dollars, each one of you.
Yes, but it means then that the government of the day,
you've learnt,
will stand up and say, let's have a new constitution, and I'll knock one up, and I'll have meetings and the Ulster for a constitution. It's only a matter of time, be it weeks or be it months or even be it a couple of years, it's only a matter of time when they will draft a constitution which gives them the rights that they're after. Gives them the principle, the privilege they're after.
And then, well, they can't draft up the constitution without holding a referendum. They can't hold it.
I know.
So that's slow. Legislation they could quickly put through. So what's got to be, what I reckon, a platform, strong platform, strong action has got to be quietly worked and then hit and done quickly. Too quick for legislation to be flowing. But also then I think when it wants to be done, it wants to be done with quite some as much political backing wherever other decisions can be had to make it go quick.
I think the guts you want is the unconstitutionality of this collection of income tax. That's got to be red hot, as far as a small party like the Progress Party goes.
Supreme Court,
if you like.
Supreme Court. That's right.
Not for posterity, but for no time. But that's really got a lot of relevance with respect to the Progress Party. A lot of relevance with respect to G.S. McN.
Well, I'm prepared to go ahead and fight it. My own personal end.
Making more sense than John Pokius in Adelaide, too, who just wants to be a martyr. He just wants to sacrifice himself on a cross in front of the public. And that's not going to help you or me or anyone. He doesn't seem to have any legal advice on what he's doing. He just wants to be a martyr and sacrifice himself to the tax department.
Civil disobedience, they call it.
Yeah. That's John Pokey's guy in Adelaide. That's him.
I'm just going to bed. I'm sorry. Talk to you.
Have a drink, Jeff. I'll turn this off and then you can relax.
You didn't have the governor. You'd then still you'd have a hard point at this moment then to stand over Fraser and say, look, you're breaking the law, now would you please hand in your resignation? In this case you can only make him, force him to do that by then having that someone else over him and saying to John Kerr, now look, you've got it. By the law, demand that he resign. Because then, do you want him to resign?
Oh, Laurie, oh, no.
Don't you say a thing. because if we're having people here tomorrow, I'm not going to barbecue. Relight
hey.
Yeah, no, it won't. It's too cold outside.
Hey, sauna and barbecue.
I'm sorry, darling, but it's too cold outside to eat. We'll be eating in here. You men will barbecue. But that fire is going to be kept going. I'm making Margot for Jeff and Ron. Would you like some Margot?
Yeah, it'll be fine.
Laurie, what have we got here?
Look, the coffee you asked for.
Oh, good, thanks.
You don't have to have it.
Oh, love it, thanks. Yeah. Yeah.
I think you can gather from that too why I think I'm sitting stronger at this moment than macroprasm is, yeah. And if Withers and macroprasm had an argument with me, I'm happy.
Yeah.
Anyway.
An interesting thing I've got to ask you, Prince Ed, is that most of the time you go east, you do TV interviews and newspaper interviews. The guys that are interviewing you don't interview you with this sort of depth in mind.
No, no, I don't give it either.
Yeah, they interview you with the tourist potential, the sort of newsworthy, the sort of novelty. Yeah, yeah.
From that, from the west, he's got a kinky idea of avoiding taxes and beating bureaucracy.
But in the communications that are going on underneath that between the premiers and the prime ministers, this is going on, and this is a separate from the media.
Yeah.
So fair enough. If I start to blow that up into the media, or before then, what I'm doing, I'm putting many politicians into a corner where they got a fight.
Yeah, and the public couldn't understand.
Yeah, now, therefore, then, if once a politician, especially a prime minister, makes a real hard, adamant position, then he can't change that, or he'll lose public face. If I don't put him in that position through the media, then I give him the opportunity to come around through letters of, law and that, to change his mind or to back off. And this is what I've been doing for a long, long time. And I think this is part of that which I think helped to bring us through to this point.
Yeah.
Because early on, if I'd done such things to them, well, one way or another, would have had it just stop on us. Because this is not in my opinion, and this is why we've done it today. But at this moment now, I think that now is the time that we don't take any more match, and we demand, I've already demanded of Sir John Kerr that if we had a meeting, which I requested, that I'd point out that Malcolm Fraser was acting illegally in two simple laws, that if I say proof to the Governor-General, then I consider that the Malcolm Fraser's government should issue a recommendation to Sir John Kerr to issue an order in council for the full open recognition of the principality. And he said he was sorry he couldn't have a meeting. And of course this is what I was trying to draw him in. Right, you have a meeting, but the meeting is that if I prove, then the governor of the day must issue that order in council for the full open recognition. But I'm gambling also that I can prove it. Because if I can't prove it, the governor will say, well, look, I'm sorry, you can't now prove what you're talking about. There's no order in council, and we consider you part of the Commonwealth. But I believe that I can say prove it. And I'm egging them in for just such a meeting.
Yeah.
Now, if for argument's sake, this is again my opinion, and I've knowledge of different politicians that I know, but if Withers and Malcolm Fraser want to have an argument with me for discussion, I'd be very happy to have Withers, Malcolm Fraser and Senator Robinson from Queensland lined up in opposition. Then I would go for Senator Ray, Don Chips and myself as the three for the other. They could certainly come with me, or they could certainly lead there, but I think from my knowledge of them that they would line up with me against those three.
I think you'd have them so confused they wouldn't know who to line up with.
They wouldn't know who to line up with.
Chip, make no mistake about it, this guy Chip
is nothing like you.
Well, I think from my knowledge of Senator Ray, and we're meeting with Don Chips, I don't think I'd have to be with Don Chips very long, and I would have him with me.
They'd use you.
Oh yeah, they might use me, but if he's using me publicly in such a meeting, we are gaining. It might be, he might be gaining, but we're going to...
They're both socialists, that's the trouble.
Socialists, aren't they?
Yeah, oh, Chip
Ray would be a socialist, would he?
Senator Ray is anti-business. Senator Ray is anti-business, anti-free enterprise, anti-capitalism.
I didn't know that.
He's a dangerous...
Senator Cotton is too? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Peter Ray from Tasmania.
I'm surprised, because, you know, I would have thought that, you know, say most liberals would be absolutely and totally for free enterprise.
They're for private enterprise, which means government licensed free enterprise.
Oh, no. Private enterprise to me is for personal business, not governmental.
Well, that's free enterprise.
Yeah.
But private enterprise, in their eyes, is you can run your own business as long as you've got a government license. Mm-hmm. And the government dictates the terms in which you write your business. That's the Liberal Party definition of private enterprise. This guy Peter Ray did a lot of damage with that, you know, Trade Practices Act and all the Corporate Affairs Act and things like that, and it's absolutely stifled the whole corporate structure within Australia.
The Liberal Party platform on the first page rejects laissez-faire, which is free enterprise. They reject it. They believe in a controlled economy.
They reject it. They reject free enterprise because, as it says in the wording of the platform, is it because it prevents the government from fulfilling its correct function.
I've got two here.
Yeah, we've got coffee and Milo. And I've got two here. We're doing extremely well today.
Yeah, well then, how's the Progress Party, if that's about the only one...
So Australia's only free enterprise. Yeah.
Well, then how is it going to elevate itself into, say, sufficient strength?
We're campaigning every day, 24 hours.
Look, those that are there now and are campaigning are certainly working hard. But then I would say, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it needs a lot more.
We do need help.
That's what I mean.
A lot of help.
A lot of help, yeah. Well, then, where and how?
Well, we can take years, but if we can get a massive
I'm not looking at years. I'm looking that I think within 3 to 6 months, this type of thing that's before us now, if you're going for years, this one, present position, can be lost. It doesn't mean that then the normal platform for the Progress Party is lost because it will still be pursuing it.
Yeah.
But this one, which I've brought to a climax point now, could within 6 months.
Well, that could be handled correctly. That could be the issue. Any political party lies dormant, or we paddle like ducks underwater until we get this magic issue, and this could be it, I think. The unconstitutionality of the Income Tax Act. That's the way to present it, isn't it?
What I'd like to do is to have some person to act as spokesman, someone who's really able to. Because you're doing a stick your nose in the door, do you?
I'll come in. I'm having a meeting with Malcolm Fraser, I'm having a meeting with the Withers or someone like that. If they're having an attack on me.
We've got a spokesman.
Yes,
on this issue, we've got a director of the Australian Taxpayers Association named Viv Forbes in Queensland. Okay? This is a matter that should be carefully documented by the Progress Party. Spread throughout Australia, and then the cover, you know, reported in the Australian Taxpayer Journal, which is a little fortnightly news magazine that goes out.
So I'm cultivating Belky Peterson up, but I'm still not feeding him the lot at any one time, because I'm evaluating, trying to evaluate what he would do and where he is heading as he gets it. If you give him a lot, all right, which I've given you, because, you know, I feel more comfortable with you, you see, and I think that you're, you know, do the right things.
And like I think what
where you're heading. I don't feel frightened of what you might do.
No.
Now, if I say some of the Labour ones, I'd be frightened of what they do.
Yeah.
I'm still also not quite sure what Melky Peterson would do, and yet I'm more comfortable with him to a fair degree.
Yeah.
But I still have got to, you know, kind of evaluate.
Keep him.
So I've got to keep a bit in reserve that he hasn't got the luck.
Well, look, I tell you what, one thing.
If he knew that he could go and knock Fraser out of the seat, perhaps he might.
Yeah.
Perhaps he might not. He might run to Malcolm Fraser and tell him to get it, to curry another favour. And right, politics do it, I know.
They do.
I would
hang you to get something for themselves.
Oh, yeah, no. But what I would like to give you now, an undertaking, a personal undertaking.
Mm.
And as I'm Ron and Laurie, the only three that know the depth of the conversation tonight, undertaking that I would not bring your name into this discussion at all. In fact, I'd let the issue die for a couple of weeks before we even raise it again.
Mm.
Just to make sure that Prince Lynn had nothing to do with it at all. It's just something we stumbled across, and through my own tax problem, well, I decided I found this out.
Well, I simply leave that to your own wise judgment, that's all.
Because we've got to leave you out of this altogether. You haven't been giving advice at all. We've got to keep you as a separate issue.
If you play it up and leave off the position of Malcolm Fraser and the Governor General in anything that you gave for a while yet, you're sitting like me with some more aces up your sleeve that other people don't know.
Yeah.
Mm. Then if the situation comes, you might give me some advice. Look, slip in there, hit them in this way, and we'll slip in here. No one knows, and they would quite play, or they're playing, but we'll now move. So if you keep the couple of aces in your sleeve, like I'm trying to keep a couple of aces in your sleeve, the aces are quite often very handy things. Because once you give the lot out, then some other party may certainly run away with the ball play and leave you standing, and they'll get all the media on it and everything else. And what's happened to the Progress Party? Oh, well, they made some mumbles about it early on, but such and such a party now has got the ball played.
Well,
you might be as active, but you know what media does to your toes?
Oh, yeah.
They just ignore you.
Cold stuff.
But
can you stop talking politics? No music, no background.
He just had a song about it, didn't he? Listen to that.
No, this is beautiful.
This is the sound of music.
No, just the sound of music.
Thank you.
should be your son. Give him the words. She is an Asian girl.
Oh, yeah. Who is it?
Grace.
On a platform when I put in the program, you see.
Well, we've got the probate issue in respect to just immediate abolition.
You've got abolition. And also you've got the both claiming the power, and the Constitution is saving the powers to the states. Unless the Commonwealth takes the power explicitly, it remains with the states. And so they are at this moment acting illegally, both claiming. This, the party declares it will rectify, and its policy is to abolish it totally. The action at the moment is illegal by the Commonwealth.
The Constitution says in all things, really, that the power has been given to the Commonwealth, the states must do it.
Unless it's been taken explicitly by the Commonwealth. That
applies to really all things, as well as probate, doesn't it? It's noble.
Yeah, but in this case, they are both. Commonwealth?
Ron? Jeff and I are going to
bed. And the state levies
pay. You can sleep in the fire room.
Jeff and I are going to
bed. Oh, I see. All right.
You can sleep in the fire room, yeah. I'll leave the blanket on for you. Thanks. Well,
it's a thing that's often worried me, that it's a pity that we haven't got the same sort of thing written into the state constitutions.
That we can swap words.
Unless the local government has passed these powers to the state government, the local government should be left with the power to do these things. I wish that same sort of thing had been written into the next strata of government downward. And then I wish it had been written into the Local Government Act that they can only do things that the people themselves couldn't best do for themselves, either individually or by voluntary actions. And then we'd be left alone at ground level where I happen to be. It's a principle of good government, but it's only covered in the Australian Federal Constitution.
But you're forming up on a new platform, are you?
That's
the one that you've drawn up.
Two and a half years ago.
The platform doesn't change, but their policies.
Statement will vary a little bit from time to time, but it's purely a policy statement only. The platform, we don't like to show it to too many people because you've got to be able to almost a pragmatic mind to understand it. It's cold and it's based on a principle and it can't change.
Policies is
next year.
Well, then that's a thing which you use when you're coming right into pre-elections, and this is just kind of, and beyond those policies, then you just say in good government, I suppose. If someone with knowledge talks about the platform, they are just the platforms of things that favour to be done sometime in the future, whenever feasible. That's the idea.
All the policies, all the interim policies, must be directed toward a gradual shift toward the policy and the platform objectives.
I think when, say, one party wins a election, of course they've got to be reasonably strong to get there, but of course in this case you want to win seats. But quite often it's on one or two issues, but very clearly and very heavily fought. If you get too many things before a public,
it confuses them,
and they say, oh, well, what are they talking about now?
Basically, the party's on about this. In a nutshell, we're based on individuals' rights, totally. We believe that rights should be protected and no privileges should be given to any one person by a government. So therefore, the party is...
Other than the monarchy.
So therefore, the party is, if it's based on individuals' rights... You must have a common law which is to protect those rights, and in order to physically protect them, you're going to have a defence force against external aggression. An internal defence force, namely a police force, to defend against internal aggression. from, you know, one another individually and in groups. And you have a legal system, a law court system, paid for by the taxpayer, which even that can be paid for. You can modify the payment there, but it's provided by government to act as an arbitrator. Then the party stands for free enterprise, because it's the only economic system which is compatible with individuals' rights. We stand for limited government, which of course is the same thing. And free enterprise, limited...
private property.
Oh, it says is a private individual's right. Mm. But anyway, that's in a nutshell what it's all about. Mm. So you expand that out. Mm. And there's a fundamental principle, which means that nobody, governments or otherwise, can start or force forward and coercion against anybody else, which is fundamental, and that's aggression. But defence, different story. Mind you, it's hard to prove.
Because of retaliation.
Retaliation
is okay. Yeah.
Retaliation is okay. We don't believe in sticking our nose in any other bodies, any other people's business, like South Africa, or Vietnam, or what's going on in Alabama,
or
the Hutt River Province.
Or New Zealand.
Well, this is their ethics too, like not the European policy. This is supposed to be the ethics of the UN.
Well, the UN is the greatest
that was their state of the policies.
I know. The United Nations is a communist outfit, and the guys that go on there are either communists or the hoods have got communists, and they are very often murderers, thieves, gangsters that have got up there, their way up through some little tiny back block of a country in Africa somewhere, and they've become a nation, and they've gone and sent thugs off to well-dressed thugs to New York. Now, we want to see limited government, because limited government means that it's laissez-faire capitalism can operate. But if somebody else starts to coercively endanger the rights of somebody else, or forcibly, that's where governments to come in and arbitrate. But the government should have no policies regarding industry or regarding environmental issues, all these other crazy damn things. Mm. We believe that property rights, security of tenure, will automatically preserve what is good in this world. The old building will be knocked down, but most of them will be preserved. What's more, some beautifully charming buildings, instead of this stunning mediocrity we see around the joint, will be built because people will have their freedom to create. So some kinky little old Spanish buildings will be built, and you find people living in caves and doing that, and there'll be all sorts of wonderful things going on. There'll be far more life because there'll be security of tenure means property rights, and activity rights, which would be part of your own body rights. Consequently, restaurants, nightclubs, that will be started up all over the place, depending what the market will take, and you'll get more nightlife, more interest, and more expansion of minds, and greater tourism, and greater everything else.
Well, I suppose I better be thinking about getting back too. At 2 o'clock last night.
I believe we missed a good party.
Good show.
They're a good bunch, aren't they?
Good
fun.
Midnight the night before and 2 o'clock last night.
Yes, and you're back around the traps tomorrow again.
I'm going to be very rude once again. Sarah is very restless. I'm going to sit with her for a while, and then I'm going to bed. Owen thinks she's got a tropical disease. So, it's been lovely having you here.
Thank you for the tea.
Tomorrow, lunch. Okay. Even more breakfast.
Merci. Merci. Thank you. Merci. Dinner.
Well, we'll give
it
the cheese and the cheese box.
Oh, yes. Certainly will be needed. I'll see you in a little while.
The cliche that we find most abhorrent in the Progress Party is one we hear nearly everywhere pertaining to laws. Most statutory laws are based on for the common good, inverted commas, for the common good. Consequently, if a law is going to deprive you of some particular privilege, or not privilege, some particular right that you have, say property rights, they're going to take a road through your property or whatever, that means, they say, it's for the common good. What they mean to say, it's for the good of everybody else except you. But you are a member of the community, so therefore it's not for the common good, because it doesn't benefit every member of the community. So it's a contradiction in terms.
Yeah,
well, mind you, Savita Street in Perth is a classical example, and you can go on.
Yeah, well, the definition of a democratic government is majority. Yeah, what's the name of the majority, with the protection of the minority.
Yeah.
And now, of course, then when you come to that, the rule of the majority at the detriment of the minority,
yeah,
is not of the basic fundamentals of a true democratic government.
It's mob rule. American founding fathers, when they formed the Declaration of Independence, avoided the word democracy, because they know how democracy can be perverted as we see it in this country today. Where 51% of the population think they can just fuck the other 49%. To hell with them, because we are the majority.
That's right. Yeah. Very often,
I hate it. You know?
Very
often. And Whitlam was the guy that used this word consensus again and again. Like,
that's right. Very often, 51% or 55% of the people voted government in.
Yeah.
Sometimes 49% voted in. You know what it's like with the gerrymandering of going on. That means then that the group that's in power supposedly represents that 49, 51, or that slight majority. Now, they make rules which very often go against the grain of their own voters.
Mm.
Now, this means that if you're in the other group, the minority, or the might even be the majority, which is very often going to be the case, more and more laws are being made. I think you know this anyway. So therefore, more and more rights are being taken from everybody, because everybody falls in the minority somewhere along the line, and laws are rarely repealed. So as one party takes over from the other party, so that more minorities are formed, and the rooms get full of statutory laws, and we're all being deprived of our rights. We advocate a certain category of laws called sunset laws.
We talk about the sunset laws and the
ones which you find hard to bring into being, because you're not quite sure if the principles are absolutely perfect. Give them 5 years and see how they go. And if you can't prove that they're doing any good, we'll
scrap it automatically.
That's beautiful. And the other one I mentioned last night was the other one. For every new law they've got to bring in, they've got to go to the statute books and find two that are obsolete, and you've got to repeal two for every new one. That's a good way to clean up the statute books, isn't it?
I think at the moment they could even go and take sort of, you know, more than that, because there's rooms full of
laws. At least two.
Yeah. And this business of government spending, it's running out of hand. The other thing is that governments, we believe, ultimately, and this could be 10, 15, 20, 40, 50, 100 years, but decades anyway, most likely, if time, the government must be divorced from the economy entirely. And that automatically...
It's similar to the separation between the state and the church.
Yeah.
The state has got a complete separation between religion and the state. The same must apply for all applied science, virtually, including the mining industry, the economy, everything.
That's right.
It's not the role of government. As we said on the ABC this morning, you heard around the ABC the other night, the legitimate role of the government does not include having a monopoly on delivering parcels and mail between Ron Manners and Jeff McLean. That's just not the legitimate role of government. But they've got it. Anyway, we just got the hell of a lot of points of it.